Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Hailing from Colorado, folk singer James Lee Baker offers personal but universal tales from his life as the son of preachers and deacons, the grandson of a plainsman and cowherder, and a truth seeker finding a home in the mystical experiences that open one up to the personal transformations that come while on life's path. No Depression wrote, "He's got such a heavenly voice and a talent for writing deeply inspiring and intimately connective songs." While American Songwriter penned, "Storytelling is one of the calling cards of this young folk singer." His recent release, 100 Summers, peaked on the folk DJ charts with a number one title track single and a number six album in September 2020 and earned a spot in several prominent folk songwriting contests. He's a man on the way up. Hey, James, welcome to Song Creating.
Hey, Steve. It's good to be here. Thank you for the time.
Good to have you. So where are you zooming in from?
I live in Denver, Colorado.
You
Aurora.
Do?
Aurora, yeah.
I think I recall you growing up in Amarillo.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with Amarillo. It's a unique place. It's sort of like working at a big tech company that feels like a startup. You know, it's a quarter million people, but it feels like a small town. And it's very windy there. Just because it's on the high plains, the Llano Estacado Plateau, and there's thunderstorms sometimes in the morning. It smells like cow shit, and I don't know. It's just it's very idiosyncratic. It's got its own character, and yeah, it was home for many years.
And a tremendous amount of music came out of Amarillo back in the 50s and 60s and earlier than that. Did that have much influence on you?
Not directly, no. But it you know, the legends remain legends, and the recording studios remain, you know, talk, you know, like within conversations and history. And so it's definitely something that we're proud of, and those the people that came out of that community, including even peripheral smaller towns like Lubbock with Buddy Holly and you know, Pampa is where actually Woody Guthrie came from.
Is that in that same little area there with Lubbock and Amarillo?
Yeah, Pampa's about 45 minutes to an hour from Amarillo. But they also have, you know, you have Conway Twitty, who came from Texas, and that's why we have the town. He named himself after the two small towns of Conway and Twitty.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So your background or your childhood was that of in a religious family?
Yes.
Were you was it 7 days a week or more just on Sunday? How did religion play a role in your upbringing?
Yeah, it was usually, I mean, every Wednesday nights for many years we'd go to Bible study, and Saturday and Sunday nights we'd have new church services in my hometown at a small congregational church. My father started practicing in the pulpit, in the ministry, in the 90s, late 90s, when I was in high school, and became an ordained minister.
What denomination is that?
Primitive Baptist. So it's a smaller smaller community of, within the Baptist faith. So yeah, my mom's father was a Baptist minister and a pastor of a church in Mesa, Arizona, and my father's sister's husband is a pastor of a church near Houston, Texas. So a lot of my family members, even my great-great-grandfather was the pastor of a primitive Baptist church. So it was something that ran deep in both sides of my family. My parents met at a church camp, which is a summer church camp in the plains of Texas, and yeah, so it was something that was an integral part of our our lives, and not only just from a, you know, an attendance standpoint, but from a service standpoint. So we would travel to satellite churches across the tri-state area of Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and my father would pastor, would preach at those churches as a guest pastor on Sundays. And so, yeah, it was a lot of driving around, taking care of people, going to church, lots of going to church, lots of eating. There's lots of potlucks, you know.
Yeah, a lot of spaghetti suppers.
Yeah.
Do you have siblings, and did any of them continue on with the generational, taking on that role again in themselves in your generation?
No, my brother, I have a brother and a sister. They're both younger, and they both sort of, my sister stayed closer to the church. My brother and I have sort of, you know, done our own thing these days with our own lives. But we haven't followed in my dad's footsteps. But he's still doing his thing. You know, he pastors a church in a town called Borger, Texas, which is about 45 minutes northeast of Amarillo. And that is an oil town community. There's oil refineries there and cattle, and so it's a very different part of the country. In some ways, I think it's pretty alien. You know, having spent some time on the West Coast and in Colorado, and having been out east, being in the sprawling, rolling Texas plains or the arid landscape of the Midwest, really not the Midwest, but the Southwest is. Mm-hmm. It's very different, very foreign, just because you feel like, I don't know, between all the yucca and the mesquite trees and the coyotes and the very dry climate, it's just a very unique space. And
does it seem a little isolating?
Oh yeah, yeah, very. Okay. But I think there's a certain beauty to it that you can find, especially in moments where solitude is a reflective thing for you as an individual. I've found that there's a great energy that's there in that solitude that kind of emerges. So I love it in a different way.
So did the church experience start, or did your music experience start in the church?
Yeah, actually, because we primarily focused on a cappella congregational singing over the use of instruments. There was a lot of emphasis around singing, and in the camp my parents met was a singing camp for church. And so even at a very young age, I mean, I was 5-6 years old, and I was learning how to lead a congregation, conduct a congregation, and learning solfège and sight reading and things like that, so that I could read church hymns and go up and, you know, lead the congregation as they sang hymns. And so music was an integral part of my life at a very early age. And my parents were both avid music fans as well. My father was, one of his favorite things to, one of his favorite hobbies was classic rock. He was a drummer in a rock band, and he really loved music and still does. He and I share that as a sort of a bread that we break together, if you like that metaphor.
Sure.
You know, and so now I have a deep love and a sort of a affection for classic rock because of him. Yeah, so it's always been a part of my life. I started high school, started doing choir and competing in vocal competitions in the region and in the state area, and did pretty well at that and enjoyed that. And so when I went to college, on a partial scholarship as a vocal performance major at a community college there, and joined the show choir and was singing jazz and a few other things. And that was sort of where I started picking up the acoustic guitar and writing folk music, because I discovered artists like John Gorka and Ellis Paul and Patty Griffin. And I was really inspired by those artists and how they were able to sort of create their own their own thing. Just pick up a guitar, go wherever they need to go, and like create a story.
Yeah. So you really weren't playing guitar then until college?
High school. Yeah. High school. 15 years old, 16 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you fit religion into your music and into your life these days?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say I don't fit religion into my life and music at all. I think that that's kind of the thing I've come to learn personally is that, or come to find for myself, is that I live on a planet of, you know, that's had over 100 billion people on it in the last 10,000 years. And I think I would be remiss to believe that, other cultures or communities didn't have mystical experiences themselves. So I have to take it all in equally, and that's one of the things that has been part of my journey the last few years, is trying to understand the wisdom of humanity or the mystical experiences of humanity and their relationship to any higher power or what the interpretation of that is. And what I found through my own studies and experiences is that there's, it's almost like, if you could call it God, God's inside the church, and we're all looking into the church through different stained glass windows. So we're all seeing this different side of the same beautiful thing. And so for me, it's more spirituality or mysticism, something a little bit esoteric that I like to talk about, if I do talk about it, because I want it to be, to some degree universal, but I also want to kind of spark, curiosity and innocence and in the songs that I'm writing, in a way that makes people feel, like there's something worth thinking about besides just, ideologies,
Yeah. Have you discussed this with your family, with your your dad and your mom?
Not really, no. Because the thing that I've also learned in the last few years is, you can't. The goal isn't to change someone. The goal isn't to try and pull them away from something that they love, or at the same time, something that they can't see within themselves. All I can do is sing my song. All I can do is sort of, just put my heart out into the world of like what I think is the beauty in existence and in spirituality. And if they benefit from it, that's great. If it opens them up to seeing, for their beliefs to become a bit more malleable, or they find them to be refreshing in new ways, then I think that that's a benefit too.
I guess the question is, have they accepted this with you, or has there been some resistance?
Oh, no, they accept it totally.
Okay.
Great. My mom and I have really good discussions where we kind of, teeter the boundary a little bit. We don't, both of us don't go, she doesn't push me away and I don't try to like influence her, but we have this sort of discussion across the fence of like, of these different concepts and just kind of entertaining that. And it's a really beautiful morning discussion over a cup of coffee. So I've found it's been really good to have these conversations with those that I love, but I'm just not doing it in a way that, that comes from a place of wanting to try and change someone,
Right. Well, it's always educational when you have a conversation with somebody who has a different viewpoint, or, you don't learn anything from someone who just, agrees with you on everything. And so the song that you have written, it definitely comes from your childhood and from how you've been raised. And I wonder, tell us a little bit about the genesis of this. I'm actually wondering if you are having grown up in this environment, what was it that allowed you to look back at it and write about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a deep question because there's a lot. I think when we grow up and we become adults and we have our own identity and we go through our own struggles and we learn our own lessons and we find our own path and we realize who we are, what we've become as an individual, we look back at the people that raised us. And, you know, I think just like a flower slowly opens up and the layers of the petals slowly show themselves, so is these layers of our generations healing, really. All these layers are healing from the trauma of our parents. And so it's not that our parents did anything wrong, because they're also doing it at the same time we are, right? They're unlearning all of the trauma that's been passed down from their parents. And I feel like all of us spend our whole lives unlearning the trauma that has been passed down through all of our generations. It might be that I have the temper of my great-grandmother, even though I've rarely ever met her because she died when I was young or whatever. But that passes down through the men in my family, for example, or maybe another issue with another family member on my mother's side. But those things make us who we are, and we spend our whole lives just trying to unclench from all of that, you know? It's really interesting to see. And so this song sort of emerged from, you know, watching the men in my life, my father and my great-grandfather and my grandfather and my uncles, being devoted to their belief system so much that they missed out on the experiences in my life. And I don't fault them for it. The song isn't about fault. It's not about angst or anger or resentment so much. It might seem that way, but it's more about a kind plea for, hey, you know, the time is fleeting and I'm getting older, you're getting older. Why don't we go spend some time together? And I think, you know, the chorus is really, I love the chorus, the line in the chorus where we talk about going to the river and casting our nets into the water. This hints at the story of, you know, when Christ came and said, come and I'll make you fishers of men, because they were all fishing, right? This is a allegorical song. It sort of is the only way we can like sort of really get across to people sometimes, you know, what we're trying to say is by speaking in their language. And so when I picked this song, I wanted to write this song through the language of the Bible, the stories of the Bible, in such a way, the wording of the Bible, in such a way that maybe, when it came down to it, those in my life who are so devoted to their beliefs would take the time to go spend some time with me before it's too late, you know. I think that's really what emerged from it, because there are a lot of moments in my life where, special moments, where people weren't there. College graduations, special.
Because they had obligations with their church?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard because it's like, you know, there is this necessity in that community to put focus on nurturing God's sheep and nurturing the saving of souls, you know, and perpetuating a message of that belief system, which from their perspective is love. And they have my point being is that the obligation is a noble one. And so it's not like, you know, they were doing a disservice to me in any way. That's why I'm not upset about it. But I just, it's sort of like a, hey, you know, let's just take a break for an afternoon and go fishing, you know?
Yeah. Now you're a father too, I think, right?
Yes, I have two teenagers. I'm
two teenagers. And has this, I have to assume that you've taken your experiences as a child and what did work and what didn't work and transferred that to your own parenting skills. As do you think about that as you're raising two teenagers?
Yeah, a lot, because at a certain point I realized that what I was taught didn't work. Well, you know, didn't work for me being a parent. You know, and I think that's a safe statement to say that it, most generations feel that way. What our mm-hmm. parents did for us, probably not something that I want to do all the time. You know, whatever those yeah. things might be. I, you know, at a certain point I stopped, you know, corporal punishment with my kids. And my son was really kind of the catalyst for that, because it just seemed so ineffective for him. Not necessarily that he, you know, he remained in trouble all the time, but he just seemed, it was almost like he seemed unfazed by it. Like I wrote in a poem once, something along the lines of, it was like he was like a judo master in basketball shorts. He could just see right through me. Like, why are you doing this to me? he was so intelligent, and he's like, why are you disciplining me like this? You know?
Yeah.
And just, it was a diffusing. It was like yelling in the mirror. You know, it's just one of these moments of like, you know, why am I doing this? This isn't working. This isn't how I'm supposed to get across to my kids. And I'm not saying that, you know, I don't want to say that to imply that my upbringing was abusive or tumultuous. It wasn't. It was wonderful. My parents were really good parents. But their methods were just different than my methods. That's all. And so, and then the methods were necessary to be different because my kids were different than I was. And so my son and I I've actually found my relationship with my son and daughter, you know, getting through to them is a lot more about being down to earth, by sitting down and talking to them like they're people, like they're tiny adults, and saying, what happened here? Like, why'd you decide to do that? What were you thinking? Like, you know, tell me a little bit more about your thought process. Like, what do you need? Like, you know, and making them feel heard and listening to their voice. And now they don't do anything bad at all. I mean, they're really good people. They might, you know, they might eat all the cheese in the fridge, but you know, it's
okay. Having raised two teenagers into their 20s and 30, they're doing bad things. You just don't know about it.
Oh,
just hopefully not that bad.
Yeah. No.
Don't let them fool you.
Yeah, the formula for me is still kind of the same. Like, let's talk about this, you know?
Yeah, but I think you've got the right idea.
Yeah.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about the music in this song. You've got a couple verses and a pre-chorus, and I'm always curious when songs develop like this, how, if you can recall back, the genesis of the song and how it developed, and did you know start with something different? I mean, did you have a lot of false starts, or did this the feel of this kind of start up and you followed it followed the same path? How did that go?
The conversation started with a mutual friend of ours. I was actually at Ellis Paul's songwriting retreat. And Paul Nelson and I were sitting in one of the quiet, you know, one of the back rooms over by the cafe or the kitchen. And we were just kind of going through our songs and talking about what we were wanting to write. And this song came up, and it was also a deep discussion for us too, because he was a preacher's kid. Hmm. And he was at the time doing a special thing where he had a capo on all of the strings at the fourth fret, except for the low E, playing in the key of, you know, playing in the position of C, which would, you know, give you this really nice key of E feel. but it'd give you that low string, which is really kind of new to me. Because I went through all the arduous work of working with, of trying to understand Ellis Paul's use of open tunings. And once I discovered partial capos, I stopped using open tunings. And so Paul introduced that to me, and we were just kind of playing around with it. And yeah, this sort of idea kind of emerged through the conversation. So I took the song back home and I just worked on it. I think the main thing I was trying to focus on at first was just the general idea of, you know, let's skip church and go fishing or something. And let's, you know, I want you to be there for me or with me. That was really the heart of this. That was the seed that I planted. And I love the first part of the song because I had this idea. If Christ was all-knowing, which seems to be the case in the Bible, then Christ would have known, and as it was kind of spelled out in the Bible, he knew what was going to happen to him. And when he had his conversations with his disciples in various times, he made that clear to them. When he went to, when he was betrayed by Judah, he called it out. Like, he knew what was going to happen. So if Christ knew what was going to happen to him, did he also know what was going to happen to the millions of people who died in his name? You know, and this is a real twist of a thought, you know, that I imagined Christ laying in bed and doubting himself, because doubt isn't a sin, you know? So I wonder if Christ, you know, and having known what he knew, having known of the dripping banner of the cross, the blood of Spanish inquisitions and indigenous civilizations and all the atrocities that would be committed in his name, I wonder if he had doubts in that moment. And so that's sort of the first moment. It's almost like saying to the person that I'm talking to, if Christ had doubts, you know, like, shouldn't you take a break for just a moment and spend some time with me? You know, and I love that line, even if he was perfect in every way, you don't have to be a sinner to feel afraid, which is a call to courage for the sake of vulnerability. Be vulnerable. It's okay to be vulnerable. Even the only person in the world that we thought was completely perfect was afraid. And so that was the kind of the starting of the song. And I felt like it was really good to kind of tell one story. I love putting people in this picture of telling the story in the first or second verses of a song and then shifting to a different picture and tying those two pictures together. It's like a tiny movie in like 4 minutes. And so this second part of that song was this image of my grandfather or my father or whoever sitting in their office in this, and they had a two-piece pinstripe suit and tie, which is sort of kind of hinting at, like, you know, like an affordable suit, right? Like, uh-huh. And they're studying the Bible, and they're on the shelf is this camera that they could use to take pictures of the children that are playing outside, but right next to the camera is a portrait, not of the children, but of Christ. So this sort of like prioritization of things, you know, and then the call again, we are made from the dust of the earth and to the dust we will return. This sort of like scripture reference. It's almost tongue in cheek, you know, it's almost sort of like I'm trying to be a little sarcastic, you know. And then the last verse really is about, you know, the good word doesn't change. Right? The Bible doesn't change. It doesn't age. I'm actually speaking in double meaning here because I'm saying the good word doesn't change, but I do. It doesn't come and go, but I do. It doesn't age, but I do. Doesn't long to make someone proud, right? The Bible doesn't spirituality doesn't long to make someone proud. It wants to make them meek. But I want to make you proud because I'm your son or your grandson, right? And the Bible doesn't disappear into the crowd, but I do. I will disappear. I will move. I will leave. I will grow up. I will become an adult. So then there's this final call, the spiritual call from the Bible of lay your yoke down and come with me, for soon you'll be just a memory, right? Soon you, and that line, that last line is really, really a punch in the chest, because it's like when we think about the people that we love that have died and moved on, all we have of them is a memory. And so to tell someone who's still alive that they're soon just going to be a memory is sort of like calling their bullshit, you know? And it's like saying like, and all the things that you're involved in that you love will be gone, because we will just remember you for who you are here. Maybe not somewhere else, but here.
There's a lot to digest in this song. The you've got the pre-chorus and the chorus, and there's no bridge or anything like that. And I find that as I start dissecting music, when pre-choruses are so valuable and they add so much to something, because it leads you into that great chorus, "Let us go to the river," which I think is wonderful. I mean, I just picture, you know, those picture Bible books, you know, with the casting the net, you know, and the, of course, the parable about fishing, you know, give a man a fish. And it's great. And I remember going fishing with my grandfather too. And I think the first time I ever saw a beating heart outside of the body was when they cut into this fish. I was like, oh no, but it is a, it's a very common, it's a very common bonding experience, I think, with generations, because it's just happened for generations and generations and eons that, you know, we will always do this. We will always fish. And, I think that's a great metaphor for the whole, what you're trying to communicate here. I have to ask you, has your family, has everybody heard this song?
Oh yeah, they love
and
it.
How do they, how do they?
Okay. Yeah.
Did they love it the first time they heard it? Did they question it? The little head scratching there? And,
yeah, I don't, you know, everyone, I would say the person in my life that, you know, would have the most to say about it is my father, because he and I are so close, and my grandfather's passed on. So the women in my life love it because, you know, they want to spend more time with the men in their lives who are busy studying the Bible and preaching the gospel. My, you know, when I played it for my uncle, my mother's brother, who doesn't go to church anymore. He was really captivated by it, because his father was always studying the Bible. I mean, my grandfather was just, that was all he did. He was just me in his study most of the time. If he wasn't doing that, he was out in the yard. And so it was, you know, it was really cool to share that song with them and to see their reaction and how they enjoyed it. I haven't really talked to my dad about this song. I think he gets it. I don't think he needs to. He's not a man of many emotional words. This is cool. You know, it's just the way he is. So I'm sure we'll have a deeper conversation about his thoughts around it if I bring it up. But he supports me. He loves the music. He likes that I, you know, I think he likes and respects that I'm kind of challenging the status quo like this and some of the stuff that I write.
You know, there's a lot to be said about a man who can accept, and you hope everyone's like this, but that isn't always the case, about a man or any parent who can accept their children for being different than what they intended to raise them as, and still, you know, follow their own path. And, you know, I think that's what any parent would hope for their kids. possibly hoping that they also follow your path, you know, which especially when it goes back a number of generations with you. But, you know, it's important. And I think it says a lot about the parent. It also says a lot about the child. And congratulations on being that good son and keeping it all together. Your style is that of you know, it just fits the way you color this song just really fits that whole I think the setting that you're in. I just picture those open plains that you grew up in, you know, in the windswept. And I imagine there's probably a lot of silos and water towers and things like that that you can see for miles and miles and miles. And as vast as that is, it also is rather isolating what you're exposed to in that area. So it's interesting.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why we chose Dobro. You know, we wanted to give that sort of an Americana or a country sound to kind of flavor.
I love the sound of a Dobro. Love the sound of a Dobro. All right, James. Thank you very much. This is great. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise. Good to see you. Appreciate the opportunity. Good to see you too.
Okay, you bet. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
More music and information on James can be found at his website, jamesleebaker.com, and we will close with his song, Leave the Saving Souls for Later.
That the Son of Man knew that he had no doubts about what to do. Did he lay awake, paralyzed by second thoughts of his own demise? Between crusades and the Inquisitions, the indigenous slain through Spanish missions. A love it done in his name. Would all he preached be heard in vain? Even if he was perfect in every way, you don't have to be a sinner to feel afraid. I want to take you to the river. We'll cast our nets into the water. Some dinner and leave the saving souls for later. In a two-piece pinstriped suit and tie, with the morning sleep still in your eyes, you part the Bible like Moses parts the sea. You've got so many lives left to set free. While the camera sits on the shelf next to a portrait of the Lord himself, your children play out in the yard, sowing memories and reaping scars. We are made from the dust upon the dust we will return. I want to take you to the river. We'll cast our nets into the waters. We can catch us some dinner and leave the saving souls for later. doesn't come and go, and it doesn't age. Doesn't long to make someone proud, then disappear into the crowd. Will you lay your yoke down and come with me? For soon you'll be just a memory. I want to take you to the river. We'll cast our nets into the water. Just some dinner and leave the saving souls for later.
Thanks for tuning into our podcast. You can listen to more interviews on songwriting by selecting Song Creating on Stitcher and Amazon Music, and also at our website, songcreating.com. And if you'd like to be a part of this series or have any comments, please contact us through the website. You can also hear more of my own music and sample songs from my new album at steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.